Welcome to part two of podcast 103. The name may be familiar, but that's about as far as that goes. Karen Cakebread stands on her own, making exceptional Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Noir with the intriguing name Ziada. We originally met Karen in Chicago at an NVV tasting at Fleming's in 2009, and then we were reacquainted at Auction Napa Valley in June of 2010. Karen invited me into her home in the northern part of Napa Valley to taste, interview, and spend a couple of moments hanging out with her very own moose. Well, I'm here with Karen Cakebread of Ziada Wines again, who we met a couple of times, actually. I think in Chicago originally, about a year or so ago. I'm sure you remember that.
Yes, of course.
Oh, of course.
Of course.
You only met one or two people that
Not
day.
Not too many people sticking a microphone in my face, but you were one of them.
And then, of course, at Auction Napa Valley. Yeah. So it's nice to see you again.
Thank you. Nice to see you.
My pleasure. And we're at your very fancy, dancy tasting room in your home, which is very cool. Which leads to my first question. Is it in your plan to do a tasting room, or do you want to kind of keep this real small to your own control to not go through the tasting room process?
Well, I think tasting rooms are important and a necessity to grow the business. I'm not in position to have my own tasting room right now, but I would entertain the idea of co-oping or getting, you know, something in town. Mm-hmm. But I don't really plan to build a winery.
Good for you. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
So how are you handling your crush and where are you selling your wine?
Yes. Well, there's...
It's not in the backyard because I don't see it back there.
Yeah. No, there's a few vines. You know, actually, that's rootstock out there. They'll be great vines next year. But I custom crush at a winery up here in Calistoga, which is 100% dedicated to people like me that don't have wineries and really don't want to. So, and there seems to be more and more of those facilities cropping up in the valley. So it's very easy to find a facility to make wine. The only drawback, I would say, is that you don't really have the flexibility of doing more small lot experimental things as you would in your own winery. But, you know, I live within the guidelines of the facility, and it's a good team, and I enjoy them, and they do a great job. So I'm happy about that.
That's good. So how did you come up with the name Ziada, for starters?
Well, I will tell anybody and everybody, the hardest thing about starting my own brand was finding a name. And I understand now why people like my in-laws and the Duckhorns and everybody else puts their family name on the label, because no one else is typically using that. So after I sort of searched the universe for a clever name, somebody else had already came up with that clever name. So I went back to basics and started looking at my mother's side of the family, which is my Italian side. And funny enough, her middle name is Annunziata, and my great-grandmother's name, first name is Annunziata. Hmm. And so I was looking at that. I was looking at my grandfather's names, and every Italian name that was in my family has also been put on a label in Italy. So I was getting a little frustrated. And Annunziata is kind of a big name to put on a label. But the spelling of her name ends in Ziata. Mm-hmm. One day I was just looking at that name, and that Z sort of jumped out at me, and I thought Ziata. It's easy, five letters, it's fairly phonetic, and the Z is, you know, kind of a strong letter, so I've gotten lots of comments on it.
It's a cool name because it stands out.
Yeah.
It is different, too, above all else. Mm-hmm. I like the family connection, and Annunziata is a beautiful name, so it always gives you a story to tell, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And Mom loves having her name on the label.
I can't even imagine.
She lives here in St. Helena, so she's my best ambassador, and she oversees one of the accounts in St. Helena for me.
Oh, that's nice.
My 87-year-old salesperson.
Well, you know, 87 in Napa could be, in most places, 50-year-old.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
As far as I'm concerned. You had mentioned your team. So who is your team?
Myself, my three dogs, all labs, all females, and my winemaker, who happens also to be a female. And honestly, I did not go about this doing the woman thing. But anyway, I would say, one of the young, up-and-coming winemakers. Her name is Anne Voiter, spelled with a V, so we have the Z and the V. Mm. Her husband is also a winemaker at a very well-known winery here, a small boutique called Donna Estates. And she's worked at a couple different wineries. She's a consulting winemaker. She has, I think, three clients right now, and has her own brand that she started with some partners called Red Mare. because she owns a red mare and she's a horsey girl.
You're involved, obviously, with the Napa Valley Vintners Association, which is pretty major for where you're at in this point.
Mm-hmm. I spent many years working with the organization with my Cake Bread hat on. And it's really an important organization. It's our marketing organization for the Napa Valley. I love working with all my colleagues and promoting our wines together and promoting Napa Valley and getting that message out there. So as soon as I was able to join the Vintners under my own brand, I signed up. So take advantage of what I can and participate in what makes sense for me. But I'm on a committee. I just can't not participate.
Well, you've got it in your blood now, don't you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Had you been to the auction in previous years as Ziada?
No, this was my first debut with Ziada.
That's what I thought. Right. And what kind of a feedback did you get, or did you get feedback? Or what kind of
result? No, it was great, yes. I got lots of good feedback, met some new customers, and support. I mean, it's really, that event is really about supporting the charities in the Valley and raising funds for the community. So even if I hadn't met some great people, it would have been just as wonderful. But yeah, I did meet some new people, and it's nice, and it's always fun to watch people's reaction, particularly the Sauvignon Blanc, because, you know, they're like, okay, here's another Sauvignon Blanc. And then they taste it, and then their eyes kind of light up a little bit. So it's just fun to watch.
That's really well said, because and there's no way to convince a listener that was my reaction, but that was my reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's cool to hear you say that, because it's not just me overreacting to something.
No.
But an event like that, you're certainly among your peers, which can be a little scary and maybe perhaps a bit intimidating, but yet people you've been around for a long time.
Yeah.
And you get a chance to show your wares. That's a pretty tall thing to do.
Yeah, and they've been very supportive. Yeah, I've got lots of great comments. I get emails every once in a while from somebody that was at one of the restaurants that tasted the wine by the glass and would, you know, take the time to actually send me an email and say, wow, it was great.
That doesn't happen too often, does it?
Yeah, so people have been really supportive. I just feel blessed, and I just feel lucky that I'm where I am and that this is a community of winemakers and brands that work together.
That's great.
Yeah, it's a lot of teamwork going on here.
So how can our listeners find your wine, which doesn't sound like it'd be real easy to get it maybe, but they can possibly find it online or any other way?
Yes, I have a website, which is www.ziadawines.com. So ziadawines.com. I do have an online store. Right now I'm out of the Sauvignon Blanc, but I do have a little bit of Pinot left. And there's a little company here in Yountville called Napa Style, owned by Michael Chiarello. It's a retail store, and they have my Sauvignon Blanc there as well. In fact, they took the remainder of my inventory to do a holiday promotion, which is rolling out November 6th, this weekend.
Mm.
So they have what I have left that is committed to them. So that's probably the only other way to get it.
And if they want to contact you by phone as opposed to the website?
Yes, that is 707-942-5779. And that is my office line. And they can leave me a message there, or they might catch me sitting at my desk, plunking away my computer.
So they can actually talk to the owner?
Yes. Yeah, of course. I answer the phone.
That's very cool. Well, great. Karen, I can't thank you enough for taking the time and certainly inviting me to your home to do a tasting as well as talk with you again. It's been a real pleasure.
Thank you, and I appreciate your interest in my tiny little brand and appreciate you getting the word out to your listeners.
We will do so, I promise.
So we'll see you next time in Napa Valley.
Hopefully at the auction next time around.
Yeah, great. Hopefully.
Find out more about Ziada Wines at ziadawines.com. Amy Aiken is the proud owner of a 1958 Morris Minor pickup truck, wife of a well-known Napa Valley winemaker, and mother of two sons. She laughs hard and usually says exactly what's on her mind, but most importantly, makes a damn fine wine. Amy, a native of Wisconsin, owns Meander Wines, based in St. Helena, California. I originally met her at the Premier Napa Valley event in February of this year. I finally caught up with Amy in May to talk about Meander, and a bit about Conspire. All right, we are in the lovely town of St. Helena, and I'm actually, it's pronounced St. Helena, right? That's what I hear the locals call it.
That's what we call it, St. Helena.
It's all kind of one long word.
One word.
I'm here with Amy Aiken of Meander Wines. Hi, Amy.
Hi, how are you today, Ray?
I'm great. How about you?
I'm wonderful, thanks.
How long have you actually been in the wine business? Not necessarily Meander, but in the wine business.
I've been in the wine business since the late 1980s, so I guess that means a little over 20 years. And I started out at the great school of winemaking called Joseph Phelps. I learned how to make wine by being in the cellar and being in the lab. I was crush help. I came out of graduate school from Davis with a master's in plant pathology and followed my heart to come up to Napa Valley to be with the man I loved very much and needed to get a job. So I applied at the local wineries and went to work every day with boots on and mixed up pounds and pounds of yeast and ran tons and tons of chemistries. It was a lot of fun. I mean, back in the late 80s, people were starting to experiment with all kinds of barrel regimes, and Joseph Phelps was great at making varieties from all over California, and I got the opportunity to learn how to make wine as a big house would.
How long were you at Phelps?
Probably 3.5 years.
And then where did you go from there?
Oh, I jumped off to Domaine Carneros to be the enologist there, where I actually had a big title and kind of worked my way up the ladder, or out of the barrel, you might say.
But that was mostly sparkling wine then, or?
Primarily, yes. When I got there, we were making only sparkling wine. It was a great opportunity to work with Eileen Crane, learn how to craft cuvées, and learn how to manage 20,000 bottles of bottle fermentations. But we did start a still wine Pinot Noir program there.
When did that start?
I want to say 92. They called it the Famous Gate, and Dan Carlson was there, and Dan Carlson came from one of the great Pinot Noir makers, Dehlinger. So I learned how to make Pinot Noir from Dan Carlson. Small redwood fermenters, little 1.5 ton tanks that we blanketed with CO2 and carefully monitored through fermentation. It was a lot of fun coming from the sparkling wine into things where everything was cool and subtle to things that were warm and bubbly and very hedonistic.
A little bit like giving birth here, it sounds like. I mean, you're really starting this from the cradle, weren't you?
Everything's very biological in the wine industry. We speak in terms of birth, life, food, death. Every manner of biology happens.
Well, that makes sense. I guess moving forward then, what gave you this crazy, nutty idea to do your own thing?
That's the million-dollar question. It is crazy and it is nutty. But I was working, between my kids, I was working as a consultant lab tech for a company that managed a winery that a lot of custom crush was done at, meaning people who did not own their own winery had the services of a winery available to them via a lease, and they could make their wine, whether they had a vineyard or not. And these great people would drive up in their Range Rovers, and their name was on the front of the bottle in huge letters. And I'd be pumping sulfurs and running chemistries all day, and I'd hand them the printout of the information. And they'd hand it back to me, and they'd say, "What would you do?" Not being a person that needs a lot of encouragement, I thought that meant that I should do it.
Kind of puts it on your shoulders, doesn't it?
Well, I think I had a love for it, and I have a great drive for it, and that's why I chose to do it.
And we have company here for a moment.
Yeah, Bocce just walked in. He's my 4-year-old Border Terrier, 25 pounds of love.
Back to the interview. How do you go about this? I mean, I understand you have this background, but to open your own, to start your own wine, that's got to be scary as hell.
I wasn't frightened. It's probably just a little crazy. I thought I could do it. You know, I had this great foundation from Joseph Phelps. I went back to think about, where the great Napa Valley Cabernet vineyards are, the fruit that I worked with, the fruit that resonated with me, the fermentations that happened at Joseph Phelps and how we put together all the wonderful blends for Insignia back in the day. And I remembered those cuvées and I remembered the vineyards and I remembered some of the growers, and so I started knocking on doors. I started knocking on Gary Morisoli's door and Doug White's door and a few other growers, and I wanted to start my own project, so I asked if I could buy some fruit from what I thought were just fabulous benchmark Cabernet vineyards. So they all said, "Sure, I'll put you on the list."
List meaning a waiting list?
Right, much to my surprise. It's not like going to the grocery store and picking things out or calling somebody and saying, "Hey, listen, I want 5 tons of really high-end Napa Valley Cabernet." That's not how it happens.
If you're on a waiting list and they come to you and your name comes up, okay, it's Amy's turn, are you committed?
Well, it's now or not. You know, when I did get the opportunity, the funny thing was, is I was on the list for a couple of years with both of these guys, and I'd run into them, and I would bring my name up, and I would say, I'm still interested in fruit, and they would kindly say, you're still on the list. You know, pat me on the shoulder. And when it did, I did get the opportunity, both of them phoned me within a couple of weeks of each other in 2003, and they said, I can cut you a couple tons. Would you like some fruit? So yes, it's pretty much now or not. If I would not have taken the opportunity then, I don't think I would have gotten it again.
So I guess at that point when they offer you that, your palms get sweaty for two reasons. One is that, you know, this is pretty exciting. Two is, wow, it's really here, right?
Well, you call Charles Schwab, you cash out your retirement account, and you start living a different way. But you get to do your own thing.
We talked about this at Premier Napa Valley. Tell me what where Meander came from, the name.
Well, I have a son named Mitchell, and I have a son named Andrew. And I was trying to figure out how to put their names together to form a label. And I didn't want to put have it be the Mitchell-Andrew show or the Andrew-Mitchell show. That's very nice, and it's a little traditional, and I'm not traditional, and I'm not necessarily very nice. So I wanted it to have its own identity. And kids often speak for each other. I don't know if you have kids, but the older one usually calls themselves me, and then they shorten the next one's name if they want something. So out of the mouth of babes came, Mom, can Meander have ice cream? Meaning, can me and Andrew have ice cream? And I said, oh, yes, you can, the whole carton. Here's two spoons. I jumped on the PTO website, and I locked and loaded on the name. And it's become just a great marketing tool. It's a lot of fun. It has its own identity. It means to take a pleasant path. There's history with the River Meander in Greece and wine history. I send out merry meanderings during the holiday season or sweet meanderings for Valentine's Day. I meander a lot. It's not necessarily a bad thing.
It's a great name. I like how you came up with it, though. It does kind of get you like a bolt of lightning, doesn't it?
It does. Well, you know, the story needed to ring true. You throw all the letters in on a piece of paper, you can find a lane or a meadow or a dell. Well, I didn't have a lane or a meadow or a dell, but I had Meander.
One thing that you're a cab person, what brought you to that? I mean, I know it's very popular here in Napa, but and maybe that's obvious, but why did you become so attracted to it as a winemaker?
Well, I think starting back in the days from Joseph Phelps, or even before them, back in the days when I was dating my husband, who was making a lot of Cabernet at a very well-known place, and we enjoyed a lot of great Cabernets, and making Cabernet and blending Cabernets, especially with the Insignia program, just really resonated with me. I think we generally start our evening, if we're going to have wine, with a little bit of white wine, a little Sauvignon Blanc, but we typically finish with Cabernet, no matter what we have. The meal is not over. We are not satisfied until we have a glass of Cabernet. I think part of that is what grows really well here, so it resonates well with me. And as a young mother, as I was at that time, it also worked really well with the school schedule. You didn't pick Cabernet until the end of September, and the kids were back in school by that time. So you had 9 to 5, Monday through Friday, pretty much at your disposal, and you could really get most of your work done fairly well. And you could manage your bottling, you know, when they're in school or when they have other activities. If you were to make white wine or sparkling wine, you probably had to start before the kids went back to school, and that's actually a very tough time for a mom to manage. So with both of us working and me starting my own company, all the pieces of the puzzle fit.
So how old are your kids now?
12 and 15.
So they're getting there, slow but sure.
They're getting there, and I'm even going to other counties to get fruit to make wine. I'm really getting outside of my 5-minute leash from the home.
Wow. What other counties?
Well, I go over to Sonoma County and get Russian River Pinot Noir for my other project.
Other project? We didn't talk about the other project.
Oh, we didn't talk about Conspire?
I want to come back to Conspire, but I want to get a couple more questions in specific to vineyards. Do you own any property at all that you grow grapes on, or is it strictly all by contract?
All the fruit sources are strictly by contract.
Is that something you'd ever want to do, or is that something you personally prefer to avoid and stick strictly to the winemaking?
I'd love to have the opportunity to have my own vineyard.
Isn't that just incredible in terms of how much you're stretching yourself as a smaller business, or no? Is that just simply a natural progression to be part of it?
Well, in these days, it is a big stress to think that I could ever achieve a vineyard of my own. But who knows?
So you have a lot of say with the contracts, with the people you're working with in terms of the vineyards?
You know, I do, but the fortunate thing is they're such great guys and great growers that I really don't need to put a lot of leverage on them. We have conversations. We talk about what needs to be done. They know what needs to be done. They've been doing it a lot longer than I have. They treat me like their little sister. If I need a little extra time to pay the bills, I give them a call and I say, Gary, I'm a little tight this week, cash flow slow. Can I spot you next time? He'll go, it's okay, Amy. You can have a little time. So it's been a wonderful relationship for me. I've learned how to do business from some of the sweetest people in the world, and they work very hard for what they do, and they do a great job. There's no amount of micromanaging that would help me out with them. They're big picture people, and they do a great job. I don't question their integrity at all.
Now, you're doing this, I didn't know that your husband's a winemaker as well. For someone else?
It's funny, because I came up here to be with the man who was my boyfriend is now my husband for 20 years. He's been making wine longer than I have, and it's really kind of a treat when someone doesn't know who he is and they know who I am. I get a little puffed up about that.
You should be, don't you think?
Well, I don't know. He's actually very well known, because he was the winemaker at Beaulieu Vineyard for 27 years.
I didn't know that. I guess I didn't do my research.
Well, his name is Joel Aiken.
Oh, okay. Is there a lot of, dinner time talk about wine, or is that something you kind of avoid? Because it is, obviously it's in your family, but you're doing two different things.
Well, it is again now because he's jumped off to do his own projects. So it's like starting another business in the family. And I've been starting this business since 2003, and it's really kind of fun to be in a position where I can help him learn some things, and I can show him the ropes, and I can give him the phone number for the attorney or the licensing agency or whatever. Because when I had to go through those things, I had to hire people to teach me how to do that stuff. And at least now I can help him do that. And very early on in our relationship, when I was new to winemaking, he was great about helping me taste things and learn the lingo and even fine points of the chemistries or whatever. But we got away from that, and we just started enjoying life together and, got married, had the kids. And for a good part of your life, all you talk about at dinner is the kids. What the kids need and what the kids need to do and what the kids aren't doing that they're supposed to do. So now that the kids are 12 and 15 and they're starting to get pretty independent, he's starting a new project. And so we've got a new baby in the house, so to speak.
And is he planning to take the same kind of path that you're going for?
Yes, he'll remain very small, a couple hundred cases, very high-end, wonderful mountainside Cabernet. So he works the mountains, I work the benchlands. It's kind of a separation of church and state a little bit. We wanted to find a way to keep ourselves unique in that manner. And then he's also doing some Sonoma Mountain Pinot Noir. So we actually do have different styles. People at the beginning who knew both of us would sometimes ask if he made the wine. And I would say, well, why don't you taste his wine and why don't you taste my wine and you tell me? And the wines are very different. Well, we're sort of a support system for each other. He watches the boys when I go on a marketing trip. I watch the boys when he goes on a marketing trip. And we actually bring home wines for each other to taste. Beaulieu made sparkling wines for a while. They still do, I guess. And he would bring home the cuvées and he would ask me what my opinion was, because he knew I was sensitive to things that he wasn't as sensitive to. And I know he is sensitive to things that I'm not as sensitive to. So it's this interesting tension that we share at home.
Distribution and availability of Meander. Where can people find Meander?
The easiest place to find it is at my website, meanderwines.com. You can Google that and find me. I have a purchase page. I am legal in a bunch of states. I can sell to California and you can ship it to yourself, kind of thing. And I'm distributed in a couple of states in small ways: New York, North Carolina, Texas, Southern California. We in Northern California think of Southern California as a different state. But really, if that doesn't work for you, email me personally from my website and I'll help you find it.
And do you do anything by phone?
The phone number is 707-963-3773. I'm the one who usually answers the phone, and I'd be happy to talk to you personally.
So somebody could talk to the winemaker just by calling in an order. That's not a bad deal.
They can just talk to the winemaker and call her and say hello. They don't even have to order.
There's an opportunity right there.
Yes, there's an opportunity.
Before I close it out, anything you'd like to say?
Well, if you would have asked me 30 years ago, did I want to grow up and be a winemaker? Because, I'm from the Milwaukee area. I grew up in Menominee Falls. I would have had no idea that I would grow up and make wine for a living. I would have thought it made more sense that I would make beer for a living, because that's what people do in Milwaukee. But here I am. I'm enjoying my life. I've meandered all over the board on my professional path, but You know, you just knock me over the feather if 30 years ago you said, you know what, you're going to be a winemaker by the time you're 45. Okay.
Pretty damn progressive, I'd say.
Oh, I don't think of it that way. I just think of it as what I do.
Amy, I want to say thanks very much for taking some time out on this incredibly beautiful afternoon to talk to us.
Well, thank you for coming all this way to see me. It's my pleasure. Is it over already?